This is Mae Brussel, and this is the beginning of World Watchers, shifting from the talk show to World Watchers. It's broadcast number 607, and here's another month gone by. I get an exclamation. I can't believe it. July is gone. July 25th, 1983. Another month has gone. It seems like it's one day, and we have another month tucked away. A year ago this evening, July 26th, a year ago on one night, I was talking about Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger, and hail to the chief, or hail to the chief. You know how we begin these programs with a resume. What were we doing and saying one year ago today? There was a meeting at the Bohemian Club, as there is this week, and when Henry Kissinger appeared, they played the particular song for the President of the United States, Hail to the Chief. And Henry Kissinger got up to speak as the band played, and he said, "No, no, I'm just Henry Kissinger." Do you think he was in oblivion forever? Do you think that he would never be seen again? Do you believe that a year ago from now he could be a president of the United States? That the Congress could change the Constitution, which they want to do, so foreign-born Henry Kissinger can become president? If you think that's far off, listen to the broadcast I did 10 years ago that Ronald Reagan would be president. I was talking about the murders in El Salvador, the whitewash of a murder. There were over 1,000 murders this last month. I was talking about Fritz Kramer, the man behind Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, and I wrote to Israel, to the Yad Vashem, V-A-S-E-H-M, asking where the Nazi war criminal Fritz Kramer went after the war. The archives in Israel keep extensive records of war criminals. He was in the docket at Dachau trial. They said, in two sentences, we have no record of Fritz Kramer, and neither does the Stanford Institute, as we said before. I talked about the Bay of Pigs and Alexander Haig, another protege of Kramer, and their link to the Kennedy assassination, and the turmoil in London, the shooting of Mr. Argoff, A-R-G-O-F, that was the excuse for the invasion of Lebanon. He survived that, and one year later, he had a press conference last week, and after surviving that assault and almost died, and said he didn't approve of the invasion of Lebanon. They shot him in London as the excuse to go into Lebanon, and obviously he was against the policy of Mr. Begin and the warmongers in Israel. I talked about Edwin Wilson and his bail and how he had hired assassins and wanted to hire more assassins involved with his trial. This week, Edwin Wilson's name came up. As I mentioned before, last week, Bob Gray, who had an office with Edwin Wilson in the CIA, runs a part of the Ronald Reagan administration of publicity and so forth, and Bob Gray was one of the names on the memo one year later that surfaced that was helping coach Ronald Reagan to become president, Mr. Wilson's partner in intelligence in Washington, D.C. I also talked about the problems with the Vatican and Roberta Calvi's hanging in London and the effect it was having on international banks, and Alfred Bloomingdale and how his money dried up for Vicky Morgan, and we'll do more on that later. And Roy Cohn was hired as an attorney for Alfred Bloomingdale, I said a year ago, and then it turns out that he runs right away to Monte Carlo, where he's with the father of the attorney of Prince Rainier, and Rainier is soon to become a widower, and his wife will die in September, the same day as Bashir Jamil. I talked about the money that dried up when Calvi was hung and how a lot of people would be chasing and running because they wouldn't have their money. Now, I'm going into a new plan with this broadcast and with the tapes that accompany it, people that take it by subscription, and the sheets that go with this broadcast. Many of you know, and some of you don't know, that if you send me self-addressed stamped envelopes, I will mail to you the day after Tuesday or Wednesday of each week the bibliography of information that I have on the program. I started that back in 1978. I'd been on the air 7 years, and there was so much information and people needed it for research and so forth that I decided to have this sheet go out. And I might have mentioned this on the air. There's a fellow up in the Bay Area where these broadcasts are played who has a mind, I guess similar to mine and other researchers, and he started charting out the connecting links of various names that I put on the air because they go so fast. And he started mailing me diagrams of these particular names as he interpreted by listening and taping the broadcasts off the air up there and putting them together. And it's the way I think, and I thought, believe that maybe I should take each week, as the broadcast is completed, the names that I have and the dates and the people that relate to each other, because it is a well-prepared program. It sounds casual, but there's a lot of work here. And make the connecting links. And then someday if I talk about Vicki Morgan or Vincent Bugliosi or Melvin Belli or Jane Mansfield, you can refer to that sheet and not just look at the name or the article that you don't have, but you will have a connecting diagram. And maybe at the end of the year, I'll get a book out and go back and do some of the back broadcasts so that you see the connections. So this week, I charted out what I had on the air last week because there were so many names, and it was a very complicated broadcast, as they all are. I think they are. It calls a lot of your attention span for an hour, and some of the names are new to you. So I'm going to tell you about the chart so that I can clarify what I said last week, because it's not a subject that's going to go away, and it progresses on. It has a past and it has a future, and I'll tell you how it is charted. Now, for those of you who get these sheets, when I read a newspaper article, I color code them with dots. And if somebody in the course of the article has died, a witness or somebody is murdered, I put a black dot. And that tells me that there was a death involved. There was an article in the LA Times this week about two vice presidents of the Bank of America who were charged with arson. And the lead article is that the vice presidents set fire to a building so they could have $10,000 insurance policy. But then you read further in the article and two people were burned in the fire. They weren't charged with murder. So I put two black dots. That means two people died. The charge is arson, not murder. They're vice presidents of the Bank of America. So if you get these sheets and you see a dot, they all photocopy the same color black, but this particular sheet has to do with people that were murdered. When I get home, I color code it green if I've had on the broadcast. Now, I'm going to run down just briefly again. This is repetition, but connecting lines so that you get it clear, and I'm going to try and do this for most of the broadcast from now on so you have the chart, and then also on the sheet you'll have the sources of information. Usually, I was giving you the source of information for the idea and not drawing the links. Now you will have them both. So the broadcast, which I had last week that I want to enlarge this week, broadcast number 606, was on Vicki Morgan, called from Dallas, Texas in 1963 to Los Angeles, California in 1983, otherwise titled From the Motorcade to the Baseball Bat, Nixon, Kissinger, and Ronald Reagan are the winners. In this ball game, they're up to bat, and they're the winners. November 22nd, 1963, at the top of the chart, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, which I describe as a coup in the United States, a coup d'etat. Down below that is Jack Ruby. He kills Lee Harvey Oswald, the only suspect kept in the jail, to protect the assassins. That's November 24th, 1963, 2 days later. Below that is Melvin Belli, the attorney for Jack Ruby, whose purpose is to conceal the assassins. Then over to the right, I have the name Dorothy Kilgallen. She attended the trial of Jack Ruby and Melvin Belli. She said that she would get to the bottom of that case. It was the last thing she did. She was murdered in 1965. And underneath that, I have an arrow going down. Dorothy Kilgallen was a close friend of Jane Mansfield. In 1967, Jane Mansfield and attorney Sam Brody, a friend of hers, were killed near New Orleans on the way to Jim Garrison with files of the Jack Ruby, Melvin Belli, John Kennedy conspiracy. Now, over to the left of the Kilgallen, I have Jane Mansfield was also a close friend of Senator Robert Kennedy. She might have been going to New Orleans for a Kennedy family. Mansfield was also doing this for Dorothy Kilgallen. So under Kilgallen, I have a Mansfield, and then I have also Robert Kennedy, the connecting links there. Now, under the Mansfield explanation of a relationship with Dorothy Kilgallen, below that is another arrow. Jane Mansfield in 19, going down to the Sharon Tate murders, because she also, Jane Mansfield was up with Mr. LaVey doing the witchcraft thing with Susan Atkins of the Manson family and Charles Manson and Jane Mansfield and Sharon Tate. And these people were with Anton LaVey up in San Francisco experimenting in the witchcraft element up in the Bay Area. In 1968, June 68, Jane Mansfield's friend, Senator Robert Kennedy, was killed. But the night he was killed, he had dinner with Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski before he went to the Ambassador Hotel. And Roman Polanski was an orphan whose parents died in Nazi Germany at Auschwitz. His mother died at Auschwitz and his father later. They were victims of concentration camps. And below that, after 1968, Robert Kennedy was killed and was close friends with Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski. And below that, the line goes down, and I call it the Beverly Hills Pogrom. Now, when I get over to the other side of it, Jack Ruby, he told Earl Warren and Gerald Ford that there would be a pogrom because of the things he did by killing Kennedy and covering up with Oswald. He suggested the Nazis, the fascists, would take over the country, and he wanted to tell Earl Warren and Leon Jaworski and Gerald Ford, poor schnook, he didn't know who he was talking to. A pogrom, incidentally, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, is an organized massacre of helpless people, especially Jews. If you saw Fiddler on the Roof, there's a scene of pogroms where they come in and tear everything apart and cut people open. This was going on in Russia before the Russian Revolution, and then the Tsarist left Russia and went to Germany and trained the Nazis, and the Nazis trained the special forces and people in the United States, the Minutemen and the Nazis that Manson worked along with. So 1 year after Robert Kennedy was killed, his friends, Sharon Tate was murdered, Roman Polanski was in London, her baby was dead, she pleaded for it to live, and Mr. Frykowski and Abigail Folger and Jay Sebring and Steve Parent all killed. And August the 9th, Lino and Rosemary LaBianca were murdered the next night. Now, you see a lot of little dots there. There's 2, 4, 6, 8 people murdered in 2 days. The first clue below that, linking to the Kennedy assassination I mentioned last week, was Ed Butler, who wrote Hate Killed Tate? Blaming the Blacks, which was a typical CIA Nazi party line, and he worked with the Minutemen and the Birch Society. Now, below that is Helter Skelter, written in blood to be associated with the Beatles, and then an arrow pointing down that the murders made Vincent Bugliosi famous. He prosecuted the case, covered up the Los Angeles Police Department and also Peter Pitches of the Sheriff Department, the CIA. As a prosecutor, he covers up the people behind the murders and then writes a book and gets money for the book. And besides getting money for the book, Vincent Bugliosi can smear the Beatles. And we'll get to that, what happens, you know what falls with John Lennon in 1980. Now, that is the part of Jane Mansfield, common denominator with Dorothy Kilgallen, the Ruby trial. And Robert Kennedy, the Sharon Tate, Roman Polanski family, the use of cover stories to smear the Blacks and the hippies. Now, of course, Dorothy Kilgallen, as I mentioned last week, was a close friend of Jane Mansfield and Sam Brody, who were killed on their way to Jim Garrison. And in January 67, before they went to New Orleans, Jack Ruby was dead. He had that 3-week cancer after he warned about the Nazi pogroms that would happen in the United States. And I diagrammed this from the broadcast last week, that from the Jane Mansfield-Sam Brody murder, the law office of Sam Brody was shared by Robert K. Steinberg, who appears and surfaces with those alleged tapes that are supposed to exist of people going white up to the White House of the President of the United States and his closest friends and a member of Congress and 2 appointed persons on the Reagan administration part of that. Now, Sam Brody inherits the office, so I assume he inherits the tapes. And I said before he graduated from Loyola Law School, which is funded by Patrick Frawley. Ed Butler worked for him, Army Intelligence, and worked in New Orleans in military intelligence with Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, a diagram going below Sam Brody and Robert K. Steinberg, is that Steinberg becomes a law partner of Melvin Belli, Jack Ruby's attorney, and he also was a lawyer for a while with F. Lee Bailey, Associated Bailey, who covers the DIA and the CIA cases from Boston to California across the world. Now, 10 years later, 1973 to 83, Steinberg is the law partner of Vincent Bugliosi, who is going to become well-known and famous, smearing the Lennons. And in fact, the index of his book mentions the Beatles about 8 or 10 times. He represents Virginia Graham, the main prosecution witness in the Manson case, always protecting the Texas killer Charles Watson. They don't call it the Watson massacres. They call it the Manson. And for a while, Steinberg wants to get into the DeLorean case, but Joseph Ball of the Warren Commission is already on that one and assigned to that one. Then Vincent Bugliosi, as I say, smears the Beatles. He uses the title of the Beatles' music for his book to associate it with that terrible crime. And then by December the 8th of 1980, John Lennon is murdered with links of Mark David Chapman to the same espionage establishment in DeKalb County, Georgia, that works with the Los Angeles Police Department today. Not yesterday, but today through Western Goals. Alfred Bloomingdale, working for the CIA committee, is dead in August of 1982, and Vicki Morgan is dead July 8, 1983. Robert Steinberg, the common denominator, is the first person to go to the jail of the assailant Marvin Pancoast. He gives him some dimes. Pancoast calls a woman who delivers these tapes to Steinberg. And then in the sheet with the diagrams, I put a few more connecting coincidences that Vicki Morgan had a lawsuit in 1977, and Paul Caruso was her attorney. Caruso was the attorney for Susan Atkins of the Manson case, and if you look up the index of Helter Skelter, you'll see the references. The second name that is in both the Kennedy assassination and the Manson is Lawrence Schiller, the journalist who is close to Paul Caruso, Vicki Morgan's attorney, and the Susan Atkins attorney, and Richard Caballero. Lawrence Schiller was the man who was selected to be with Jack Ruby. As soon as he got that three-week cancer and his sister saw him bloated up, he was taken to Parkland Hospital, and nobody could see him except Lawrence Schiller. He's sort of the vulture of these cases. He also was one of the last people to write about her with Lenny Bruce, who was talking about the Kennedy assassination in the nightclubs in Los Angeles, and write about Janis Joplin and other LAPD hits. You see these famous authors, Schiller or Bugliosi, they take these cases, and it happens with the John Kennedy assassination too, and they divert it to another place, like turn it around with some facts that are true, and then spin the answers and the conclusions off. And Lawrence Schiller is great at that. And so he was a journalist that worked with Paul Caruso, Sue Atkins, and he worked with Jack Ruby, and he also was involved with the Manson family, writing and being with the main characters involved with those murders of Sharon Tate and the other people. Another person whose name came out in the news this week was Cary Grant. Vicki Morgan dated, and I'll go into that, the King of Morocco, Faisal, for several years, and was with Bernie Cornfield and Cary Grant. Cary Grant is one of these people like Grace Kelly that weaves in and out of every scene of Monte Carlo, Hollywood, London, the who's who of what. Cary Grant was one of Vicki Morgan's associates or contacts. Now, there was a story, and somebody who maybe takes these broadcasts or hears it can remind me of the source, but the night that Sharon Tate was murdered and all the people were murdered, Cary Grant was at the home of the caretaker earlier in the evening. He wasn't there when all the murders took place, and at first the police arrested William Garretson, G-A-R-R-E-T-S-O-N, because there were these screams of five people being slain and not a sound. He was right there on the grounds in a home. And he said, well, I had the stereo on or something, some feeble excuse. But Cary Grant was visiting him that evening before the murders took place. And then Cary Grant is later associated or dating or traveling with or being with Vicki Morgan as one of her entourage. Now, the Sharon Tate murders took place in 1969, and Vicki Morgan, who was fairly young, what, 17, allegedly met Alfred Bloomingdale on Hollywood Boulevard at Schwab's, or the vegetarian restaurant on Sunset Boulevard. That's where they were supposed to have met. she goes right from there to this large estate up in the Hollywood Hills where all these shenanigans and sadomasochism is going on. And now I wonder, with the kings and the entourage that she had and the people she was with, if she wasn't even already selected for Alfred Bloomingdale to pick her up at that place. He was an established person and the heir to the Bloomingdale department stores, and the family's well known, and goodness knows what his links were closely to Ronald Reagan through all these years. And we're talking about 1969 when Reagan was governor. This was a political scene. And here's Vicky up with all these people and seems to interweave the writers, the lawyers. She had a lot in common with the whole scene. And again, as I say, Ed Butler worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, and then he, in New Orleans, in military intelligence, helped make that record, I Am a Marxist. And then he's writing about the Sharon Tate case to try to smear the blacks. Remember in the control of Candy Jones, one of the first things the CIA did was to train her to hate blacks and Italians and Jews and identify their smells or their noises or whatever. So that was part of the program in training you to become a CIA agent. So we don't know, how intricate the Manson story was. He was a student of Mein Kampf and Adolf Hitler, as was Mr. Hinckley before he shot Ronald Reagan. He traveled with the Nazi Party and Posse Comitatus in the same group as the Manson family, and Hinckley had the same background. Now, I talked to Paul Krasner today. The realists are for sale. The Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And the Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up, and the SLA is the CIA. And first time I met Paul, he was doing investigation into the case of Charles Manson, and he asked me, what do you know about Manson? And I had so much information about the Manson family, and we became friends, and that was in 1972. So I asked him if he was following the Vicky Morgan case and the links to the law office of Steinberg with Vincent Bugliosi and the overlapping of these various people that seemed to touch Vicky's life as well as the Manson family. And he gave me the address of two places where you can write, and I'll give you those addresses, to follow up on information about the Manson family and Vicky Morgan and maybe the interconnecting links. One is a newspaper in San Francisco called Appeal to Reason, and Paul Krasner just wrote an article for them. It's 495 Ellis Street, and if you don't have a pencil, you can call me at home and get that, or write to me and get it. 495 Ellis Street, number 237, apartment or office number 237, San Francisco, 94102. And as for volume one, number 12, it's 50 cents for the Paul Krasner article, and you may want to subscribe. They're doing investigative work on Marvin Pancoast and Vicky Morgan. And the other address is LA Weekly, J. Levin, L-E-V-I-N, 5325 Sunset Boulevard, LA 90027. Now, in the course of his researching the Manson family, he was aware of the fact and wrote about in these articles that the Los Angeles Police Department confiscated tapes of the Sharon Tate family, and I knew for years that there were tapes there of their shenanigans, and the Los Angeles police was selling them. And I'm just going to mention two cassettes. They're not for sale, but the police department was selling them, and people are familiar with the fact that they were taped. One is of Jane Wyman, Ronald Reagan's first wife, and Greg Bouncer, the attorney in Hollywood. Now, Greg Bouncer is the attorney for MGM, for ABC American Broadcasting, for Howard Hughes. He was the attorney for Howard Hughes. Kirk Kerkorian is MGM, and also Mr. Bronfman of Permandex, the assassination teams that involved Roy Cohn, and again, all of these people that each week I'll chart out for you, allegedly in the home of Sharon Tate were some very personal tapes, shall we say, of Ronald Reagan's first wife with Greg Bouncer. No wonder Nancy Reagan doesn't talk to her. There's all these stories about fights in the White House and how she has nothing to do with Jane Wyman and she hates Jane Wyman. Maybe she was afraid that these things would surface at this time and rub off on Ronnie and ruin their great dream, you know, their dream to be the king and queen of America, which they finally got. Maybe there's something about Jane Wyman messing around with other people the LAPD has. I wouldn't like my ex-mate photographed and those things sold. So maybe she's got a good reason to be scared, you know? Then the other set of films Paul writes about, there's a whole lot of them. One is Mama Cass, that's Cass Elliott of the Mamas and Papas, Yul Brynner, Warren Beatty, and Peter Sellers having their little sex parties together. After Sharon Tate was murdered, they offered $10,000 reward to find out who killed Sharon Tate. And the Los Angeles Police Department has those tapes. But after that, Mama Cass was murdered in London, and Peter Sellers, I had believed for a long time, had been murdered. And he's off. Warren Beatty and Yul Brynner, of course, are around. But they offered $10,000 to find out who killed Sharon Tate. Now, the interesting thing, some of you might remember from earlier broadcasts, and some of you might not know, that I'm friendly with a sheriff who helped arrest the Manson family at the Spahn Ranch, and they rounded them all up, the pre-dawn raid with helicopters, police, and everything, took them all to the police department, then took them all out to the Barker Ranch in the Mojave. They weren't supposed to be picked up. The police department would have had the $10,000, but they didn't want it because they set up the whole thing. So they were in the custody of the police, and they were transferred to another safe house out in the Mojave at the Barker Ranch, where finally, through a fluke of talking and being careless and thinking they'd be protected, they were finally caught. While rewards were out for the killers, the Los Angeles police had them and nested them in another safe house out in the Mojave Valley. So you can order this LA Weekly and get that story and keep up with those items. Now, last week I was mentioning, or the week before, that the story of Vicki Morgan having to die is that she was so despondent, she didn't have any money, she was out of money, and yet they said she had another case pending in court that would have given her an income, which in fact did give her an income. And broadcast 605, that's July the 11th, I mentioned that February the 12th, 1982, Alfred Bloomingdale had made a written contract with Vicki Morgan for 10% of the Showbiz Pizza Place, and a written promise of $10,000 a month for 2 years, and then profits after that money from there, and the checks came to her from Fort Lauderdale. This was from the LA Herald, a series of articles in September of 1982. She had this contract. Now, if you want to look more about the pizza place that she was partnered to, Fortune magazine has a long story, High Profits from a Weird Pizza Combination, and it's about Nolan Bushnell and a guy named Bob Brock, who was her partner. I mentioned Brock several weeks ago on the air. Fortune magazine has a article on the tremendous profits of the pizza business, and this is Fortune, July 26, 1982. So 1 year before she was murdered, she had 10% of this pizza business. I mentioned several people that weren't identified and that there were 90 restaurants and 300 franchises. Well, that wasn't just off the top of the hat, because a respectable magazine like Fortune magazine, 1 year before she's killed and the exact same time that she's made a partner with 10% of the business, is written up as a company that's going on the stock market, that they have 1,000 stores they wanted by 1985, and it goes into their business. They invested $225 million. And it also involved in 1978 Warner Communications, and the Atari business sold the Bushnell the Pizza Time restaurant with the rights to promoting this. And it tells about the offices in Orlando, Florida, and the regions where they would put their pizza parlors in New Orleans, Oklahoma, Chicago, Detroit, Seattle, California. And they were going to promote Pizza Time and Showbiz Pizza. And she is a 10% partner, and even though she didn't win the palimony suit, they did make it clear that she was, in fact, a partner in this huge pizza business coming out of Texas, and it involves Pepsi-Cola and the Atari Warner Communications Group, which goes back again. I believe Gerald Ford is on the board of the Warner Communication. He is. It's a who's who of various people. In fact, I got a brochure this week on the Warner Communication Company. Incidentally, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal once a year run ads if you want to know about certain corporations, and you send for these books, and I sent for about 30 of them, and they're starting to come, and it tells you who's on the board of these various corporations. Like Beverly Sills is always with the far-right fascist group, and she's on the board of this Warner Communications, and there's people that you think are attending to their opera, and they're wining and dining with the worst fascists in the world. And then you get this board of directors, and you get a little different view of what's going on. It is 8:30 now. We're going to take a break for 1 minute, and then we're going to come back with the second half of this broadcast.